the ground and burns rubber out of the parking lot.
Don't you ever crave one?
The car surges faster and faster. The urgent hum of the engine vibrates through the seats. Tim's passing other cars on the right. We've shot past Middletown and are closing in on Hartford. I check my watch. It's 8:50. My curfew is 11. We won't be anywhere near New Hampshire by then, assuming we aren't wrapped around a tree somewhere. My fingers ache from holding so tightly to the door handle. I feel a prickle of sweat across my forehead. Tim, you have to stop. You have to stop and let us out, I say loudly. We don't want to do this with you.
Lighten up, Samantha.
You're going to get us all killed, Nan pleads.
Bet you you'll both die virgins. Kinda makes you wonder what the fuck you were saving it for, huh?
Timmy, will you please stop saying that word? Of course, this request is all Tim needs.
What word? Oh, that word.
He makes a little song out of the word, says it loud, quietly, all strung together. On and on and on, with the F-bomb for the next few minutes. Then he puts it to the tune of Colonel Bogey's March. On and on and on again. A bubble of hysterical laughter fights its way to my lips. Then I see that the speedometer has leaped into the 100s, and I'm more terrified than I've ever been in my life.
Shit, cops!
Tim pulls a wide, unsteady turn into a truck stop. I pray that the police car will follow us, but it speeds on by, siren blaring. Nan's face is parchment. The Jetta squeals sideways to a halt. Tim staggers out of the driver's seat, saying,
"Damn, I gotta pee,"
and wanders off in the direction of a gigantic blue dumpster. I yank the keys out of the ignition, climb out, and hurl them into the bushes at the side of the parking lot.
"What are you doing?"
Nan screams, following me, palms outstretched at her sides. "Making sure we get out of this alive." She shakes her head.
"Samantha, what were you thinking? Tim had his bike lock keys on that."
I'm bending over, resting my hands on my knees, breathing deeply. I turn to look at her. Seeing the expression on my face, she starts to laugh.
"Okay, that's crazy," she allows. "But how are we going to get out of this?"
Just then, Tim weaves back toward us. He slides into the front seat, then drops his forehead onto the steering wheel.
"I don't feel good."
He sucks in a deep breath, wrapping his arms around his ducked head, making the horn honk.
"You nice girls, you really are. I don't know what the hell's the matter with me."
Clearly, neither Nan nor I have an answer. We close the side door of the car and lean against it. Traffic streaks past on our left. So many people, all oblivious. We might as well be stranded in the desert.
"Now what?" Nan asks.
Mom's given me 1,000 lectures on what to do in a situation with an unreliable driver. So I call her. I call home. I call her cell. Ugh, Clay's cell. Tracy's. Not that she could help me from the vineyard, but no answer anywhere. I try to remember where Mom said she was going tonight, but come up blank. Lately, it's all a big blur of economic roundtable and town hall meeting and staffing support information event. So I call Jace. He answers on the third ring.
"Samantha, hey,
I interrupt to tell him what's happening. Nan, who's checking on Tim, calls.
"He's passed out, I think. He's all sweaty. Oh my God, Samantha!"
"Where exactly are you?"
Jace asks.
"Alice, I need help," he shouts into the background. "Are there any highway signs? What's the nearest exit?"
I peer around, but can't see anything. I call to Nan, asking what town we last passed, but she shakes her head and says,
"I had my eyes closed."
"Just hang on," he tells me. "Get in, lock the doors, and hit the hazard lights. We'll find you."
They do. 45 minutes later, there's a tap on the car window, and I look up to see Jace, Alice behind him. I open the door. My muscles are cramping and my legs are about to give way. Jace wraps his arms around me, warm and solid and calm. I sink into him. Nan, scrambling after me, raises her head, sees us, stops dead.
Her mouth drops open. After a minute, he lets go and helps Alice, surprisingly silent and forbearing, shove the unconscious Tim into the back seat of the bug. Tim lets out a loud snore, clearly down for the count. "What did he take?" Alice asks.
I don't know," Nan stammers.
Alice bends fingers on his wrist, smells his breath, shakes her head. "I think he's fine, just passed out. I'll take these guys home, if she..." Alice gestures to Nan, tells me where to go. "Then you swing by and pick me up, okay, Jay?" She flings herself into the driver's seat, jerking it closer to the wheel to accommodate her small frame. Nan, piling into the bug next to Alice, frowns at me and mouths, "What's going on?" Then mimes putting a phone to her ear. I nod, then take a long, shaky breath. I wait for Jace to ask what the hell I was thinking, going anywhere with someone in that condition. But instead he says, "You did exactly the right thing." I scramble to be that girl Jace thinks I am, that calm, unruffled girl who doesn't let things faze her. She's nowhere to be found. Instead, I burst into tears, those embarrassingly noisy ones where you can't catch your breath. Of course, he rolls with that. We stand there until I get hold of myself. Then he reaches into the pocket of his jacket and hands me a Hershey's bar.
"Good for shock," Alice tells me. "She is, after all, a medical professional in training."
I threw the car keys in the bushes.
"Smart move."
He heads into the thicket, ducking to sweep his hands on the ground. I follow, doing the same.
"You must have some arm,"
he says finally, when we've searched for about 10 minutes. "Hodges heroin softball through 8th grade, I offer. "Now what do we do?" Instead of answering, Jace walks back to the Jetta and opens the passenger door, gesturing for me to climb in. I do, watching in fascination as he yanks off this plastic piece from the steering column, then pulls off some of the coating on 2 red pieces of wire and twists them together. Then he hauls out this brown wire and touches it to the red ones. Sparks fly. "You're hot-wiring the car? I've only seen that in movies."
"Just to take it home."
"How'd you learn this?" Jace glances at me as the engine revs into high gear.
"I love cars," he says simply. "I've learned all about them."
After we've driven for 10 minutes in silence, Jace says musingly,
"Timothy Mason, I might have known."
"You've met him before?" I'm surprised. First Flip, now Tim. Somehow, because I didn't know the Garretts, I imagined them in a world completely separate from my own.
"Cub Scouts."
Jace holds out his hand, 2 fingers up in the traditional salute. I chuckle. Boy Scout is not exactly what comes to mind when I think of Tim.
Even then, he was a disaster waiting to happen, or already in progress.
Jace bites his bottom lip reflectively. "Cocaine at the campouts?" I ask.
"No, mostly just trying to start fires with magnifying glasses and stealing other people's badges. A good enough guy, really. But it was as if he just had to get in trouble. So his sister's your best friend? What's she like?"
"The opposite. Compelled to be perfect." Thinking of Nan, I looked at the clock on the dash for the first time. It's 10:46. My rational mind, which so recently deserted me, tells me there's no way on earth my mother can blame me for breaking curfew under these circumstances. Still, I can feel my body tense up. Mom can find a way, I know she can, to make this all my fault. And worse, Jace's. "I'm sorry I got you into this."
"It's nothing, Samantha. I'm glad you're all okay. Nothing else is important."
He looks at me for a moment.
"Not even curfew."
His voice is low, gentle, and I feel the tears gathering in my eyes again. What's wrong with me? For the rest of the drive, Jace keeps me distracted. He gives an exhaustive and totally incomprehensible list of the things he needs to do to get the Mustang working.
"So I've got about 300 HP with my TrickFlow aluminum heads and exhaust, and the clutch is slipping at about 260 horsepower in 3rd gear. And I want the Centerforce aftermarket unit, but that's a big $500, but the way the Mustang slips every time I floor it in third gear is killing me.
And looking how it's meant to. Then he tells me that he was working on it earlier this evening in the driveway while Kyle Comstock and Andy sat together on the front steps.
I was trying not to listen or look, but oh man, it was so painful. He kept trying to do this smooth guy move, that knee bump maneuver or the yawn arm stretch deal, and he'd lose his nerve at the last minute, or he'd reach out a hand and then pull it back. Andy licked her lips and tossed her hair until I thought her head was going to snap off. And the whole time they were having this conversation about how last year they had to dissect a fetal pig in biology lab.
Not exactly an aphrodisiac.
Nope. Biology lab might have promise, but dissection and a dead pig are definitely going down the wrong road.
So hard to find that right road, I shake my head, especially when you're 14.
Or even 17.
Jace flips the signal switch to ease off the interstate. Or even 17, I concur. Not for the first time, I wonder how much experience Jace has had. When we pull up outside the Mason's house, Alice and Nan have evidently just pulled in themselves. They're standing outside the bug, debating. Most of the lights in the Mason's house are dark, just a faint orange glow coming from the bowed living room windows, and two porch lights flickering.
"Can't we please get him in without anyone seeing?"
Nan's begging, her thin fingers clutching Alice's arm. The real question is whether we should get him in without anyone seeing. This is not the sort of thing your parents shouldn't know about. Alice's tone is deliberately patient, as though she's already been through this several times.
Alice is right, Jace interjects. If he doesn't get caught, well, maybe if I hadn't that time with Lindy, I'd have discovered a taste for shoplifting. This is more than just that. If nobody knows how bad it's gotten, Tim could find himself in this situation again, with a different outcome. So could you. So could Samantha.
Alice nods, looking at Nan, but addressing her brother. Remember River Phillippe, Jace? His parents let him get away with anything, turned a blind eye to everything. He ended up blindsiding three cars before he hit the median on I-95.
But you don't understand. Tim's in so much trouble already. My parents want him to go away to some awful military camp. That's the last thing that's going to help. The very last thing. I know he's an idiot and sort of a loser, but he's my brother.
Nan cuts off abruptly. Her voice is shaking along with the rest of her. I go over and take her hand. I think of those awkward dinners I've had at their house. Mr. Mason's unseeing gaze at the table. Mrs. Mason prattling on about how she stuffs her artichokes. I feel as though I'm on a seesaw, swaying back and forth between what I know is right and true, and every past moment and reason I know has led to this. Jace and Alice are right, but Tim's such a mess, and I keep remembering him saying, so lost, I don't know what the hell's the matter with me.
"Can you sneak in and open the bulkhead door?" I asked Nan. "Maybe we could get Tim down to the basement and he can crash in the rec room. He'd be in better shape to face it all in the morning anyway."
Nan takes a deep breath. "I can do that." We look at Alice and Jace. Alice shrugs, frowning.
"If that's what you want, but it seems all wrong to me." "They know the situation better than we do," Jace points out. "Okay, Nan, go open the cellar door. We'll get this guy in there."
Naturally, as we're carrying him, Tim wakes up disoriented and throws up all over Alice. I pinch my nose. The smell's enough to make anyone gag. Surprisingly, Alice doesn't get angry, just rolls her eyes, and without any self-consciousness at all, whips off her ruined shirt. We sling Tim, who despite being thin is tall and not easily portable, onto the couch. Jace fetches a bucket from beside the washing machine and puts it next to him. Nan sets out a glass of water and some aspirin. Tim lies on his back, looking pale, pale, pale. He opens reddened eyes, focuses hazily on Alice in her black lace bra, says, "Whoa," then passes out again. I got in big trouble for being 10 minutes late for curfew last time. But tonight, when I actually was involved in a life-threatening incident, one in which I definitely could have used better, swifter judgment. Why on earth didn't I call 911 on my cell and report a drunk driver? On this night, when the VW pulls into our driveway, the house lights are dark. Mom isn't even home yet.
Dodged more than one bullet tonight, Samantha.
Jace hops out to open my door. I go around to the driver's side. Thanks, I tell Alice. You are great to do this. Sorry about your shirt. Alice fixes me with a stare.
No sweat. If the only thing that idiot comes out of this with is a horrible hangover and a dry cleaning bill, he's way luckier than he has any right to be.
Jace deserves better than trauma over some girl who made dumb choices and wound up dead. Yes, he does. I look right back at her. I know that. She turns to Jace.
I'll go home now, Jay. You can say goodnight to your damsel in distress.
That one stings. Blood rushes to my face. We get to the front door and I lean back against it. Thank you, I repeat.
You'd have done the same for me.
Jace puts his thumb under my chin and tips it up.
It's nothing.
Well, except that I can't drive, and you never would have gotten yourself into that situation, and...
Shh.
He pulls on my lower lip gently with his teeth, then fits his mouth to mine. First so careful, and then so deep and deliberate, that I can't think of anything at all but his smooth back under my hands. My fingers travel to the springy, soft texture of his hair, and I lose myself in the movement of his lips and tongue. I'm so glad I'm still alive to feel all those things. Chapter 22. When I get to the B&T, an hour early the next day, I head straight for the pool. I breathe in the chlorine scent, then focus on the steady back-and-forth motion of my strokes. The routine is coming back. Swim, no rest, kick, no rest, stroke drill, rest, breath to right, breath to left, breath every third stroke. And so is the timing. Everything else falls away. 45 minutes later, I shake out my hair, cupping my hands to my ears to get out the water, then head into Bai's by the bay to find Nan, who hasn't answered any of my texts. I'm imagining the worst. Her parents heard us, came down, and Tim's already en route to some hardcore camp in the Midwest, where he's going to have to chip granite and eventually get shot by an angry counselor. But then, Nan wouldn't be calmly sorting aprons in the corner of the store, would she? Maybe she would. Like my mother, my best friend sometimes puts order over the physical world first. What's up with Tim? Nan turns around, leans her elbows back against the counter and looks at me. He's fine. Let's talk about what really matters, which wasn't important enough to tell me. Why? What wasn't important? Nan pales under her freckles. Angry at me? Why? And then I get it. I duck my head and feel a flush creeping up my neck. You didn't think to mention that you have a boyfriend? Or that he's, like, incredibly hot? Samantha, I'm your best friend. You know everything about me and Daniel. Everything. My stomach twists. I haven't said anything to Nan about Jace. Nothing. Why not? I shut my eyes and for a second feel his arms surround me. Such a good thing. Why wouldn't I tell Nan? She scrunchfolds an apron that says, "Life's a beach and then you swim," and piles it carelessly on top of the others. You're my best friend. You obviously didn't meet this guy yesterday. What's going on? It hasn't been that long, a month, maybe even less. Heat rises to my face. I just felt... didn't want to. Mom's always so down on the Garretts. I just got in the habit of keeping it a secret. Your mom's down on everyone. That never stopped you from telling me about Charlie and Michael. Why is this any different? Wait, the Garretts? You mean the they multiply like rabbits family next door? When I nod, she says, Wow, how'd you finally meet one of them? So I tell Nan the story. All about Jace, this summer, nearly getting grounded and him climbing up to my room. and all the stars.
He climbs up to your window?
Nan puts her fingers over her mouth.
Your mother would have a cow over this. You do know that, don't you? She'd have a herd of buffalo if she knew this was going on.
Now she sounds less angry, more admiring.
She would, I say, as the bells over the door jangle, heralding the arrival of a woman in a fuchsia beach tunic with a very large straw hat and a determined expression.
When I was here the other day, she says in those slightly too loud tones some people use when speaking to salespeople, there were some darling T-shirts. I've come back for them.
Nan straightens, schooling her face to blankness.
We have many lovely T-shirts.
These had sayings, the woman tells her challengingly.
We have lots of those, Nan rejoins, straightening her shoulders.
Stony Bay, not just another sailing town, the woman quotes. But in place of the knot, there was a
drawing of a rope knot, Nan interjects. Those are over in the corner near the window seat.
She jerks her thumb in that direction and turns more toward me. The woman pauses, then makes her way to the stack of shirts.
How big is this relationship I know nothing about, Samantha? He looks, I don't know, older than us, like he knows what he's doing. Have you and he?
No. No, I would have told you that, I say.
Would I?
Is there a discount if I buy one for each crew member on our cruiser? Calls the woman.
No, Nan says tersely. She leans in closer to me. Daniel and I are talking about it, a lot lately.
I have to admit, this surprises me. Daniel's so controlled, it's hard to remember he's also an 18-year-old boy. Of course he and Nan are discussing having sex after all this time. I get a flash of Daniel in his school uniform, leading the debate team at Hodges, calling out in his measured way, "Cons go first, then the pros will have an equal amount of time."
Tim thinks I'm an idiot. Nan presses her index finger into the wax of a candle shaped like Stony Bay Lighthouse. He says Daniel's a putz and will suck in bed anyway.
Tim.
What happened with him? Did your parents catch on?
Nan shakes her head.
No, he got lucky. Or rather, he survived to mess up another day, thanks to your surprise boyfriend and his scary sister. Mommy and Daddy didn't hear a thing. I went down to the basement before I left and dumped the bucket of vomit out. I just told Mommy he'd stayed up late and was tired.
Nan's, Alice may be right about not pretending about this now.
Last night was...
She nods, a quick inhale of breath, nibbling on her thumbnail.
I know, a disaster. But packing him off to some boot camp? I don't see how that's going to help him.
The woman has come up to the register, her arms full of shirts, all pink. Nan turns to her with a bright, professional smile.
I can ring those up for you. Would you like to put them directly on your club tab or pay separately?
I hover nearby until the clock tells me I've got to report for duty. Nan doesn't say anything else, though, until I'm getting ready to leave, when she pauses in changing the paper for the cash register to say,
Samantha, you have what every girl wants.
You have Daniel, I say.
Sure, but you have everything. How do you always do that?
Her voice is ever so slightly bitter. I think of the Nan who just has to do the optional extra credit work for every school project, who has to point out to me whenever I have a minus next to my grade while she has a plus, who has to comment that pants that fit me would be way too big for her. I've never wanted to compete with her, only be her friend, the one person she doesn't have to best. But sometimes, like now, I wonder if, for Nan, there's any such thing.
I don't do anything special, Nanny.
The bell jingles as another customer walks in.
Maybe you don't.
Her voice is weary.
Maybe you're not even trying. But it all works out for you anyway, doesn't it?
She turns away before I can offer an answer. Assuming I even had one.
Chapter 23.
I pour myself a lemonade after work and am climbing out of my stupid crested bathing suit right in the kitchen when the doorbell rings. Even our doorbell chime has changed since summer began. Now we have this one that can chime the first few notes of about 20 different tunes, all the way from Take Me Out to the Ball Game to Zippity Doodah. In the last 2 weeks, Mom's programmed it to chime the opening of It's a Grand Old Flag. I kid you not. I grab a tank top and shorts from the laundry room and pull them on hastily, then peer through the frosted glass. It's Nan and Tim. Odd. Thursday and Friday are Daniel nights for Nan, and my house is not exactly Tim's preferred hangout. It's not even my preferred hangout.
Are you interested in a closer relationship with the Lord?
Tim asks when I open the door.
'Cause I've been saved, and I want to pass on the good news to you. For only $1,000 and 3 hours of your time. Kidding. Can we come in, Samantha?
As soon as they get into the kitchen, Nan heads for the fridge to get some of my mother's lemonade. After all these years, she knows exactly where to locate the special ice cubes with mint and lemon peel. She pours a glass for Tim, and he takes it, frowning at the little ice cubes with their flecks of yellow and green frozen inside.
Got any tequila? Just kidding, once again. Ha ha.
He's uncomfortable. It's been a long time since I've really seen anything from Tim but bored indifference, stoned apathy, or jacked up contempt. Tim wanted to say he was sorry about last night, Nan offers, crunching an ice cube.
Actually, Nan wanted me to say I'm sorry,
Tim clarifies, but he looks directly at me.
I wanted to say I'm fucking sorry. That was wicked stupid, and I would have thought anyone else who did that to my sister, or you, was a complete and unredeemable asshole. Which, of course, leads to the inescapable conclusion that that is, in fact, indubitably what I am.
He shakes his head, takes a gulp of lemonade.
Note my use of impressive SAT words, though. Too bad I got my ass booted out of boarding school, huh?
How long has it been since I've heard Tim apologize for anything? He's got his head hunched down, sandwiched between his folded arms, taking deep breaths as though he's been running miles, or all this takes more oxygen than just breathing. Even his hair is damp, like he's sweating. He seems so unmoored that just looking at him hurts. I glance at Nan, but she's polishing off her lemonade, her face impassive. Thanks, Tim. We all survived, but you're really scaring me. How are you?
Well, aside from being the same idiot I was yesterday, only not quite as trashed, I'm fine. And you? Sup with the old Jace Garrett and you? Is he getting any further than my buddy Charlie did? 'Cause Charlie was pretty damn frustrated. More importantly, what's doing with Jace's hot sister?
His hot sister has a boyfriend who's a football player and weighs about 250 pounds, I answer, dodging the Jace question.
Course she does, Tim says with a smirk. He probably teaches Sunday school, too.
No, but I think he might be a Mormon. I smile back. Cheer up, though. They've been together for about a month, and from what Jace tells me, that's pretty much Alice's limit.
I'll live in hope, then.
Tim drains his glass and plunks it down.
Do you have anything like plain carrots or celery or apples? Everything in our fridge has some kind of crap on it.
It's true, Nan says. I bit into a perfectly ordinary-looking plum this afternoon, and it had some weird blue cheese filling. It's that thing Mommy got from QVC.
The pumper. It injects tasty filling deep into the heart of all your favorite foods,
Tim quotes in a movie phone voice. Just then, the doorbell rings again. It's Jace this time. He's wearing a faded gray t-shirt and jeans. Must have come straight from work. Hi, Nan says brightly. In case you didn't figure this out last night, I'm Nan, Samantha's best friend. I'd love to say I've heard all about you, but actually, she hasn't said a word. My brother says he knows you, though. She extends her hand to Jace. After a beat, he takes it, shakes it, looking over at me with a slightly nonplussed expression.
Hello, Nan. Mason?
His voice gets an edge as he greets Tim, and I see Tim's jaw muscles clench. Then Jace moves to my side and slips an arm tight around my waist. We wind up in the backyard because everything inside my house is so hard and formal, no comfortable place to sit and lounge. Jace lies on his back in the grass on our sloping lawn, and I lie crossways with my head on his stomach, ignoring the occasional flick of Nan's eyes. We don't talk much for a while. Jace and Tim idly discuss people they know from soccer in middle school. I find myself studying the boys together, wondering what my mother would see. There's Jace with his olive skin and broad shoulders, his air of being older than 17, nearly a man. Then there's Tim, so pale, dark circles under his eyes, freckles standing out in strong relief, rangy, skinny legs cross-legged, his face handsome but pale and angular. Jace's jeans are stained with grease, and his t-shirt is frayed at the collar, stretched out of shape. Tim's in crisp khakis with a blue-striped Oxford shirt rolled up at the sleeves. If Mom was asked who was dangerous, she would immediately point to Jace, who fixes things and saves animals and saves me. Not Tim, who, as I watch, is casually crushing a daddy long legs. Wiping his hand on the grass, Tim says, "I need to get my GED, or I'll either be shipped to the Foreign Legion by my parents, or spend the rest of my life, which will then be very short, living in their basement." "My dad did that, got a GED," Jace offers, playing with my hair. "You could talk to him." "Your sister Alice didn't do it too, by any chance?"
Jace's lips twitch.
"Nope."
"Bummer. I also need a job, so I don't have to spend my days at home with Ma, watching her figure out new uses for the pumper."
"There's an opening at Mom's campaign," I say. "She needs all the help she can get now that she's totally distracted by Clay Tucker."
"Who the hell's Clay Tucker?"
"The..." Nan lowers her voice, even though all she says is, "younger man Samantha's mother's dating."
"Your ma's dating?"
Tim looks shocked.
"I thought she pretty much confined herself to a vibrator in the shower nozzle since your dad screwed her over."
"Timmy!" Nan turns scarlet.
"There's always a job to do at my dad's store."
Jace stretches and yawns, unfazed.
"Restocking, placing orders, nothing too exciting, but..."
"Right." Tim's eyes are cast down as he tears at a hangnail on his thumb.
"I'm sure that's just what your pop needs, a plastered dropout stock boy with a Jones for illegal substances."
Jace props himself up on one elbow, looking squarely at him.
"Well, provided that stock boy isn't still drinking, etc., taking my girlfriend on a joyride when he's hammered. Ever again."
His voice is flat. He watches Tim for another moment, then lies back down. Tim turns, if possible, slightly paler, then flushes. He glances at me, at Nan, then returns his attention to the hangnail. Silence. "Well, restocking and stuff might not be thrilling, but that's probably a good thing," Nan says after a minute or two. "What do you think, Timmy?" Tim's still focusing on his thumb. Finally, he looks up.
"Unless Alice does restocking too, preferably spending most of her time on a ladder in those little short shorts, I'm thinking I'll talk to Gorgeous Grace about politics. I like politics. You get to manipulate people and lie and cheat, and it's all good. From what I read, Samantha's mom prefers to think of it as working for the common weal."
Jace stretches his arms over his head, yawning. I sit up, surprised to hear Jace recite Mom's last campaign slogan, the one Clay Tucker mocked so mercilessly. Jace and I never mention politics, but he must have been paying attention to hers all along.
"Cool, sign me up. I'll be a cog in the common wheel. With my track record, I'll probably be able to screw up all three branches of government in about a week and a half," Tim says. "Does Hot Alice have any interest in politics?"
Mom gets back early, luckily after Nan and Tim have trudged home and Jace is again training. She has a meet and greet in East Stonehill tonight and wants me to come along. Clay says that since I'm focusing on family, we really need to see more of mine. I stand next to her at Moose Hall for approximately 8,000 years, repeating, "Yes, I'm so proud of my mother. Please vote for her,"
while she shakes hand after hand after hand. When she first got elected, this was kind of fun and exciting. All these people I'd never met who seemed to know me, happy to meet us. Now it just seems surreal. I listen hard to Mom's speech, trying to analyze how things have changed. She's much more assured, with all these new hand gestures, chopping the air, arms outspread in appeal, hands crossed over her heart. But it's more than that. Last time it was mostly local issues Mom talked about, and mildly. But now she's taking on federal spending and the size of government, and the unfair taxation of the wealthy who create all the jobs.
"You're not smiling," Clay Tucker says, bumping up next to me. "So I figured you were hungry. These hors d'oeuvres are amazing. I'll take over while you eat a few."
He hands me a plate of shrimp cocktail and stuffed clams. "How much longer does this go on?" I ask, dunking a shrimp.
"Till the last handshake, whenever that is, Samantha."
He gestures at my mom with a toothpick.
"Look at Grace. You'd never know she'd been doing this for 2 hours, and her shoes probably hurt, and she might need to visit the little girl's room. She's a pro, your mama."
Mom does indeed look fresh and calm and cool. She's bending her head to listen to an old man, as though he's the most important thing in her world. Somehow, I've never seen her ability to fake it as a strength. But right now, I guess it is.
"You gonna eat that?" Clay asks,
spearing a scallop before I can answer.
Chapter 24. Late that night, I'm lying on my bed, staring at the ceiling, fresh out of the shower, wearing a white nightgown I've had since I was 8. It used to be romantically long, now it clings to my thighs. Mom's finally admitted exhaustion and has gone to bed in her suite. For the first time, I find myself wondering if Clay's ever spent the night here. I wouldn't even know if he had. Her rooms are on the other side of the house and there are stairs from the yard. Ugh, don't think about that. There's a tap at my window, and I look over to find a hand splayed on the glass. Jace. Seeing him is like that feeling you get when you've gotten the wind knocked out of you, and then can, at last, draw a deep, full breath. I go over, put my hand against his, then push up the window.
"Hey, can I come in?"
He does, gracefully, legs planting themselves firmly, while ducking carefully under the transom, as though he's done this 1,000 times before. Then he looks around the room and smiles at me.
"It's so tidy, Sam. I've got to do this."
He takes off one of his sneakers and tosses it toward my desk, then the other, carefully and quietly toward the door. Then one sock, hurled to the top of my bureau, and the other into the bookcase. "Don't hold back." I catch hold of his shirt, yank it off, and throw it across the room, where it hooks onto my desk chair. As I'm reaching for him, he puts his hand on my arm.
"Sam."
"Hmm," I say, distracted by the thin line of hair that circles his belly button and edges lower.
"Should I be worried?"
I look up at him, my thoughts scattered. "About what?"
"The fact that you're apparently the only girl on the planet who doesn't tell her best friend everything the moment it happens. I have sisters, Sam. I thought that was a rule. The best friend knows all. Yours didn't even know I existed."
"Nan?" I ask quickly, then realize I don't know what else to say. It's kind of complicated with her. She's got a lot going on. I just thought I'd... I shrug.
"You're being considerate?"
Jace asks, moving away from me and sitting down on the bed.
"Not ashamed?"
I feel the breath whoosh out of my lungs and can't seem to take the next breath. "Of you? No. No, never. I bite my lip. His eyes assess my face.
"I'm not trying to put you on the spot. Just figuring out what's what. You're, I don't know, the state senator's daughter. I'm, well, one of those Garretts, as Lindy's dad used to say."
He says the phrase as though it's in quotes, and I can't stand it. I sit down on the bed next to him, put one hand on his cheek. "I'm just me," I tell him. "I'm glad you're here." Jace studies my face, then takes my hand, pulling me down. He carefully curls around me, so my head is resting on his arm, and his head's resting on my shoulder. His fingers move slowly through my hair. The paradox of Jace is that at the same time I'm so conscious of the heat of his chest against my back and the muscles under the shorts on the legs twined around mine, I feel so safe and comfortable that I fall almost immediately asleep. I wake to Jace shaking my shoulder.
"I should go," he whispers. "It's morning."
"Can't be." I tug him closer. "That was too short."
"Is." Jace kisses my cheek. "I've gotta go. It's 5:27.
I grab his wrist, squinting at his digital watch. "Can't be."
"Honest," Jace says. "Listen, morning doves."
I tilt my head, discern a series of owl-like sounds. Sliding out of bed, Jace hauls on his shirt and socks and shoes, comes back over to me, leans forward, kisses my forehead, then moves his lips slowly to the corner of my mouth. "Do you have to go?"
"Yeah, Samantha."
He stops talking. I put my arms around his neck and tug him down. He resists for a moment, then slides in next to me. He has his hands in my hair, which came out of its braid during the night, and our kisses get deeper and a little wilder. I slip one arm under him and pull, moving him on top of me, looking into those green eyes which widen a fraction. Then he leans on his elbows, and those careful, competent hands undo the front buttons of my nightgown. Strangely, I'm not embarrassed at all. I'm impatient. When his lips descend, my sigh of pleasure feels like it is traveling through every inch of my body. "Jace?" He nudges his lips against one breast and slowly skims his fingertips over the other, so lightly, giving me goosebumps all the same. "Jace, I want, please." He looks up at my face, his eyes drowsy and dazzled.
I know, I want to, but not like this, not with no time, not with nothing.
He swallows.
"Not like this, but Jesus, Samantha, look at you."
And the way he does look at me makes me feel absolutely beautiful.
"I can't look away," he whispers huskily, "but I have to go."
Taking a deep breath, he buttons my nightgown back up, then presses a kiss to my throat. "Jace, are you? Have you?" I feel his head shake once, then he moves so he's looking me in the face.
"No, I haven't. Almost with Lindy. But then, no, I just didn't. I never felt with her the way I feel whenever I even catch sight of you. So no, I haven't."
I lay my palm against the stubbly skin at the side of his face. "Me neither." His lips curve and he turns his head to touch them to my palm.
"Then we do need time. So we can..."
He swallows again and shuts his eyes.
"Sometimes when I look at you, I can't think. We need time so we can figure it out together."
"Okay," I say, suddenly shy for some reason.
"I love the way your whole body turns pink when you're embarrassed," he murmurs. "Everywhere. Your ears blush. Even your knees blush. I bet your toes blush."
"That's not the way to get them to stop." I flush even more.
"I know."
He slides slowly off me and off the bed.
"But I don't want them to stop. I love it. I have to go now. When will you be home today?"
I fumble to think about something other than yanking Jace back down to me. I have a double shift at Breakfast Ahoy, so just till 3.
"Okay," Jace says. "Too bad the store's open late tonight. I'll be back around 7. I'll miss you all day until then."
He slides the window open and slips out. I close my eyes, lift my hand to touch my throat where he kissed me. I'm a virgin. Apparently Jace is too. I've heard the sexual congress lecture in health class, seen R-rated movies, listened to Tracy brag about how many times a day she and Flip can do it, read books with steamy scenes. But there's so much I still don't know. Does instinct just take over? Is it good right away,
or do you have to acquire a taste for it, the way people say you do for wine or cigarettes? Does it hurt like anything the first time, or barely at all? Does this mean I have to buy condoms, or will he? The pill takes forever to be safe, right? I mean, you have to take it for a month or more first, right? And I'd have to go to my doctor to get it. My doctor, who's in his early 80s and has a handlebar mustache and nostril hair, and was my mother's pediatrician, too. I wish I could ask my mother these questions, but imagining her face if I tried is scarier than not knowing the answers. I wish I could ask Mrs. Garrett, but he's her son, after all, and she's only human. It would be weird, very weird. Even though this is something I know I want, I start to panic a little, until I remember the person I trust more than anyone else in the world, Jace, and I decide he's right. We'll figure it out together. Chapter 25. When I get home from Breakfast Ahoy, with sore feet and smelling like bacon and maple syrup, the only sign of Mom is a post-it note, vacuum living room, a task I blow off. The lines from the last vacuuming are still visible. The phone rings, but it's not Mom. It's Andy.
Samantha, can you come over? Mom's sick and Daddy isn't home yet, and I have... Well, I'm going to see Kyle, and... Would it be okay if you babysat until Jace gets back? Duff isn't good with diapers, and Patsy has this major rash. You know, the kind you need a prescription cream for. It's all over her bottom and down her legs.
I, of course, know nothing about diaper rash, but say I'll be right over. The Garrett's house is unusually hectic.
Mom's upstairs, sleeping. She really doesn't feel good.
Andy fills me in while trying to apply eyeliner and put on her shoes at the same time. I redo the eyeliner for her and French braid her hair.
Has everyone eaten?
Patsy, but the other guys are really hungry, even though I gave them all Lucky Charms. Alice is out with Brad or something. I can't remember. Anyway. Andy peers out the door.
Mr. Comstock's here. Bye.
She dashes out, leaving me to Harry and Duff and George, who are practically brandishing forks, and Patsy, who smiles confidingly up at me and says,
Poop!
I start to laugh. This is what comes after boob? Duff opens the refrigerator. Discouraged, he sighs.
Guess so. Mom's really gonna have to get creative with the baby book. We got nothing here, Samantha. What are you making for us?
In the end, the Garrett's dinner that night consists of English muffin toaster pizzas, boxed macaroni and cheese, and my mom's lemonade and broccoli sun-dried tomato and pecan pasta salad, less than a success, which I send Duff over to my house to get, explaining about the special ice cubes. While I'm giving Patsy and George a bath, there's a commotion from down the hall. Voldemort, the corn snake, has escaped again. I hear Duff's footsteps thundering around and Harry shouting excitedly, and then see this slim shape squiggling into the room, trying to coil itself into George's dirty transformer sneaker. I'm so proud of the way I reach out, scoop up Voldemort, and calmly hand him over to Duff. Without even screaming when Voldemort, evidently stressed, does what corn snakes will do and defecates all over my hand.
Poop!
Patsy shouts delightedly as I go over to the sink to wash it off. Half an hour later, Patsy's asleep in her crib with the 5 pacifiers she insists on holding in her hands. She never puts them in her mouth. George stretches out drowsily on the couch, nodding over Animal Planet's 10 most startling animal metamorphoses. Duff's on the computer, and Harry's building what looks like the Pentagon out of magna tiles when the door slams. In comes Alice, whose hair is now a deep auburn, with an inexplicable blonde streak in front, and Jace, evidently fresh from delivering lumber, sweaty and rumpled. He lifts his chin when he sees me, his face breaking into a broad smile. He heads toward me, but Alice blocks him.
"Shower before you smooch, Jay," Alice says. "I rode in the bug with you, and you're officially disgusting." While he's upstairs, I fill Alice in.
"Mom's asleep?" She's incredulous.
"Why?"
I shrug. "Andy said she felt lousy." "Crap, I hope it's not the flu.
I've got 3 tests coming up and no time to play stand-in mom.
Alice starts taking the dinner dishes off the table and dumping leftovers into the disposal.
Samantha is done here now.
Jace, returning to the room, picks up a yellow plastic back scratcher that is on the kitchen counter, along with a pair of dirty socks, an empty Chips Ahoy box, 5 matchbox cars, Andy's eyeliner, and a half-eaten banana. He taps the back scratcher on each of Alice's shoulders.
You're now officially mom until Dad gets home. Samantha and I are going upstairs.
And he takes my hand, dragging me after him. But all that urgency is apparently more about getting away from the chaos downstairs than about luring me to his bed, because once we get up to the room, he just loops his arm around my waist and leans in for a leisurely kiss. Then he tilts back, surveying me.
What? I ask, reaching back out for him, wanting more.
That's what I was wondering, Samantha. Do you want to?
Yes, I respond immediately. He laughs.
Here's where you need to hear the actual question. I was thinking a lot about what we talked about this morning.
How do you...
Do you want to plan it all out, or...
Do you mean like the date and the time and the place? I think that would make me too tense, like some sort of countdown. I don't want to plan you, not that way.
He looks relieved.
That's how I feel. So, I was thinking we should just make sure we're... prepared. Always. Then see when things move there so we're both...
Ready? I ask.
Comfortable,
Jace suggests.
Prepared.
I give his shoulder a little shove. Boy Scout?
Well, they didn't exactly have a badge for this,
Jace laughs, though that one would have been popular, not to mention useful. I was in the pharmacy today, and there are way too many options just in, condoms.
I know. I smile at him. I was there, too.
We should probably go together next time,
he says, picking up my hand, turning it over to kiss the inside of my wrist. My pulse jumps just at that brush of his lips. Wow. In the end, we go to CVS later that night because Mrs. Garrett wakes up and comes out of her room, rumpled in a sapphire bathrobe, to ask Jace to pick up some Gatorade. So here we are in the family planning aisle with a cart full of sports drinks and our hands full of
Trojans, Ramses, Magnum.
Geez, these are worse than names for muscle cars, Jace observes, sliding his finger along the display. They do sound sorta, well, forceful. I flip over the box I'm holding to read the instructions. Jace glances up to smile at me.
Don't worry, Sam, it's just us.
I don't get what half these descriptions mean. What's a vibrating ring?
Sounds like the part that breaks on the washing machine. What's extra sensitive? That sounds like how we describe George.
I'm giggling. Okay, would that be better or worse than ultimate feeling? And look, there's shared pleasure condoms and her pleasure condoms, but there's no his pleasure.
I'm pretty sure that comes with the territory,
Jace says dryly.
Put down those Technicolor ones, no freaking way.
But blue's my favorite color, I say, batting my eyelashes at him.
Put them down. The glow-in-the-dark ones, too. Jesus, why do they even make those?
For the visually impaired? I ask, reshelving the boxes. We move to the checkout line.
Enjoy the rest of your evening,
the clerk calls as we leave.
Do you think he knew? I ask.
You're blushing again,
Jace mutters absently.
Did who know what?
The sales guy, why we were buying these.
A smile pulls the corners of his mouth.
Of course not. I'm sure it never occurred to him that we were actually buying birth control for ourselves. I bet he thought it was a housewarming gift.
Okay, I'm ridiculous. Or party favors, I laugh.
Or, he scrutinizes the receipt, supplies for a really expensive water balloon fight.
Visual aids for health class?
I slip my hand into the back pocket of Jace's jeans.
Or little raincoats for...
He pauses, stumped. Barbie dolls, I suggest.
G.I. Joes, he corrects,
and slips his free hand into the back pocket of my jeans, bumping his hip against mine as we head back to the car. Brushing my teeth that night, listening to the sound of a summer rain battering against the windows, I marvel at how quickly things can completely change. A month ago, I was someone who had to put 25 unnecessary items, Q-tips and nail polish remover and 17 magazine and mascara and hand lotion, on the counter at CVS to distract the clerk from the box of tampons, the one embarrassing item I needed. Tonight, I bought condoms and almost nothing else with the boy I'm planning to use them with. Jace took them all home, since my mom still periodically goes through my dresser drawers to align my clothes in order of color. I'm pretty sure she wouldn't buy the supplies for a really expensive water balloon fight excuse. When I asked if Mrs. Garrett would do the same and find them, Jace looked at me in complete mystification.
I do my own laundry, Sam.
I've never had a nickname. My mother's always insisted on the full Samantha. Charlie occasionally called me Sammy Sam, just because he knew it bugged me. But I like being Sam. I like being Jace's Sam. It sounds relaxed, easygoing, competent. I want to be that person. I spit out toothpaste, staring at my face in the mirror. Someday not too far away, Jace and I will use those condoms. Will I look different then? How different will I feel? How will we know when to say when? Chapter 26. 2 days later, Tim's following my directions to Mom's campaign office for an interview. He looks like a completely different person than the one at the wheel for the Bacardi run to New Hampshire, neatly clad in a khaki suit with a red and yellow striped tie. He drums his fingers on the steering wheel, lights a cigarette, smokes it, firing up another the moment he's done. "You feeling okay?" I ask, indicating that he should turn left at the four-way intersection.
"Like shit."
Tim tosses the latest cigarette butt out the window, punching the lighter down again.
"I haven't had a drink or a joint or anything in days. That's the longest that's happened since I was like 11. I feel like shit."
"You sure you want this job? Campaigning, it's all show. It makes me feel that way, and I'm not even drying out." Tim snorts.
"Drying out? Who the hell says that? You talk like my frickin' grandpa."
I roll my eyes. "Sorry, I'm not all down with the current slang. You get my point anyway."
"I can't stay home all day with Ma. She drives me up the friggin' wall. And if I don't prove that I'm doing something valuable with my time, it's off to do hard time at Camp Tomahawk."
"You're joking. That's the name of the place your parents want to send you?"
"Something like that. Maybe it's Camp Guillotine. Camp Castration? Whatever the hell it is, it doesn't sound like any place I'll survive. No way I'm gonna have some epiphany about how I need to apply myself to life while living on roots and berries and learning how to build a compass out of spider webs. Whatever the hell they have you do when they drop you in the wilderness by yourself. That shit is just not me."
"I think you should go for the job with Jace's dad." I point to the right as we come to another intersection. "He's a lot more relaxed than Mom. Plus, you'd have your evenings free."
"Jace's dad runs a goddamn hardware store, Samantha. I don't know the difference between a screwdriver and a wrench. I'm not Mr. Handyman like Loverboy."
"I don't think you'd have to fix anything. Just sell the tools. It's this building right here." Tim skids into the driveway of campaign headquarters, where the lawn is plastered with huge red, white, and blue Grace Reed, our towns, our families, our future posters. In some of them, she's wearing a yellow windbreaker and shaking hands with fishermen or other heroic salt-of-the-earth types. In others, she's the mom I know, hair coiled high in a suit, talking to other movers and shakers. Tim hops out and walks up the sidewalk, yanking his tie straight. His fingers are trembling. "You going to be all right?"
"Will you quit asking that? It's not like my answer's gonna change. I feel like I'm about an 8.9 on the Richter scale."
"So don't do this."
"I gotta do something, or I'll lose what's left of my mind," he snaps.
Then, glancing at me, his voice softens.
"Relax, kid.
When not too blasted to pull it off, I'm the master of faking it.
I'm sitting in the lobby flipping through People magazine and wondering how long this interview will run when I get a call on my cell from Jace.
Hey, baby.
Hey, yourself. I'm still at Tim's interview.